Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, Mention of the Generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and this is episode 109 of The Prerogative. On this episode, we take a look at season 2 of Oh My Goddess, entitled Flights of Fancy, licensed currently in America by Funimation. And, yeah, I'm not going to ignore the squirrel in the room, and squirrel's a good name for it. Yeah, I kind of skipped the week there, folks. Reason being, as I kind of just made mention to, I may be the only podcaster, or at least podcaster, who attempted to do a podcast with a squirrel in his walls. To make a long story short, a squirrel got into our house and got into our walls. We didn't, and not, or at least, to say, my room's walls. And, we're trying to get the bugger. And it happened last Wednesday. So, yeah. Kind of was afraid to come down here for a couple days. Until I didn't hear it anymore and we pretty much guess it's gone. So, didn't catch it. Hopefully it's not died, because I do feel bad for the little bastard. Probably just trying to stay warm, but yeah. I didn't come down here for like a couple days. I just took my laptop. I'm like, I'm not gonna be here when it pops out, so I'm going upstairs. So yeah, so. And by that time it was the weekend, and I had tons of stuff to do, and more important, tons of work to do, and my actual job, so. Yeah, so you're not gonna get 5 episodes out this month. I apologize. I was going to attempt it. I really was. But wasn't going to be 5 episodes. It was going to be 4 episodes. Anyways, I do apologize for not getting it out that last week. But it's here this week, so as I said, we are continuing our look at Oh My Goddess this week by taking a look at season 2. Now, this is something I rarely do. I did this with Sekirai once, and then I decided if it's 2 seasons, I'll watch them both together. But in this case, I decided I'll try again watching each season. Considering that each season is 25 episodes, 24 episodes, I figure I can split them up into 2 episodes. I think that's what I'll do from now on. If I'm reviewing a series where it has 2 seasons, but they're both 13 episodes, I'll watch both of them as one, like Sekirai was. Because there's not much content there to do each season as a individual, I can do them both in one episode. But when it's something like, oh my god, it's where each season is 24 episodes, you have more than enough content and more enough stuff to talk about over the course of an hour. Hour and a half as I go sometimes. Before we get into the review proper, I do want to bring up something. My good friend, Harry, who lives in Florida, you know, I've met Harry due to the WrestleCast and to RVT Entertainment, all my friends there. RVT. Harry Van Dam. I apologize, Harry. Podcasting is awesome when it's live. But Harry, unfortunately, lost his daughter about a year ago to a very unfortunate incident. I'm going to play something that will take you all this rain. His thing that he's doing a very special thing, donation, and a where he's trying to collect money to give to the hospital that basically took care of his daughter, to get back to the hospital for trying and everything. It's a very important cause. It's called the Audrey Jeanette Weber Memorial Fund to benefit St. Joseph's Children's Hospitals. So I'm going to play this little thing here to tell you all about it.
Hello, folks. My name is Harry Weber. On March 23rd, 2014, my daughter, Audrey Jeanette, was treated at St. Joseph's Children's Hospital in Tampa, Florida. Unfortunately, she passed away that night from her injuries. Ever since then, I have continued to think about what I could do to honor my daughter's short time here in this world. A couple of weeks ago, I came to a decision. I decided to do a fundraiser to benefit the Children's Hospital at St. Joseph's. I got in contact with someone from the foundation who sent me a wish list of items they use the most of. They also, after I filled out an application, gave me permission to use their logo and also use of their own fundraising website where they cover any fees. Meaning, if you donate $25, then the entire $25 goes to the foundation. So it is with great pride that I can announce that beginning Monday, January 19th, I will be listing the first Audrey Jeanette Weber fundraiser to benefit St. Joseph's Children's Hospital. The fundraiser will run through March 23rd. Once the fundraiser is over and the money is received, every single penny will be used to purchase items off the wish list, which will then be presented to the hospital. It is my hope that this will turn out to be very successful, and it is for a good cause.
So, as you can see, that's a very good cause that he is trying to collect money for. In the show notes, I will have a link to the fundraiser site. I also have a link to the YouTube video to which I just played. I'll probably also put this on the site itself. It's a very good cause, and I very hope anybody that's listening to this will at least check out the site and maybe just give a little, because if we all give a little, it'll make a big difference. So I hope you guys will certainly check that out. With that being said, let's get into our review of Oh My Goddess Season 2, Flights of Fantasy. This synopsis is going to be a little bit different. Hold on, I need to take some water. Because if I'm going to do this joke, I got to do it proper.
I know, right?
H2O is good. Alright. Me. Last time on Oh My Goddess. KG made a wish to a goddess that he'd like for her to stay with him forever. As such, he now has a lovely goddess by the name of Belle Dandy that's dedicated to him forever. Joining him are Belle Dandy's sisters, Erd, who of course wants her little sis to be happy ever after, and her younger sister, Scud, who desperately wants Big Sis to only be for her, since she's the perfect sis. And they continue their lives living on Earth. After eradicating the Demon King virus program, they continue their lives and continue many more adventures where they continue to explore their desire to be with each other. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Oh My Goddess, Season 2, Flights of Fancy.
出会うべき人たちが窓の向こう虹の向こうに見える気づいてるはず見上げた空は今でもあの時と
talking about music. Now, and of course we're going to start off by talking about the opening and closing theme here. I mean, in general, you know, well, first of all, in general, when it comes to this whole review, as I said before, this could be more compare and contrast. Because a lot of stuff is the same, but there are some things that are different, and it's also compared to each season. So in general, when it comes to the music, the same themes that I talked about before, the earthy tones, and how they deal with heaven, hell, and earth all apply here. So you have a lot of earthy, a lot of Celtic thematic notes that are here. This is, by the way, the same reason why I'm not going to talk as much about those Celtic thematic aspects. And, of course, the whole Japanese technology aspect that I talked about before last episode when I get to story as well. But right off the bat, in the opening, though I don't know if we can call it Celtic. You know, it was Celtic in the first intro, but this intro, oh yeah, it's more Scottish. You know, let me put it this way. I am to bagpipes what Christopher Walken is to cowbells. You need more bagpipes! I don't know why I like bagpipes as an instrument. I think it's maybe an acquired taste. It's like somebody liking haggis. It's an acquired taste. But for whatever reason, if I hear bagpipes in a song, I love it. I do realize that my tastes are not everybody's tastes. So I am at a difficult loss at what to say here. That being said, I do love the opening song. It's bright, it's cheerful. It definitely sets the mood for what this season is about. In particular, if you watch that intro, it basically tells you all the different arcs that are going to happen. And there's four arcs, really, to go over. Because you have the opening arc that then goes into the Perth arc that then goes into the sort of Scud finding her angel arc, and then of course the Hildy arc. Four little arcs, four nicely paced arcs. And you do have closing theme. By the way, the opening theme is called The Color of Joy. By the way, all these are done by Yoko Ishida, who of course did music in the first season. We had a lot of people returning, same director, same animation studios, produced by the same company, TBS, excuse me. Let me just double check on that, because I do believe we're right. Yeah, TBS, Tokyo Broadcasting Systems. And the same singer. So she does the intros and the outros here. The opening is Color to Joy. The outro for the first 11 is Our Miracle. And the and As Lovers is the ending for episodes 12 through 24. Again, back to the opening. I love it. It's just so cheerful and bright. Again, those Celtic slash, we'll call it Celtic slash Scottish thematic notes are in there, which are, again, hard to miss when you have bagpipes playing. That being said, I've listened to both the TV intro and the full song. I actually like the TV intro better because there's the point in where they bring the bagpipes in, and so there's a bit more importance, I think, in putting the TV intro on the bagpipes, which just adds such a distinctive note of harmony to the song. With that just unique sound that a bagpipe, again, I think it's just an extinct taste that maybe I have. You know, it wouldn't be the first or last time I have a strange and unique taste that nobody in the world probably shares. But it's just such a bright and cheerful song. It just gets you right into the series. It tells you everything you need to know about the series. You know, if you want to look at what an intro theme, an intro song, and it's supposed to do for a series, you know, this is a perfect example of everything that it's supposed to do, because it does everything. You know, as I watch this series, I realize that this entire series just is just a great sort of basic intro of how to do a harem and how to do different little things, whether it be animation-wise or music-wise or story-wise. As for the ending themes, again, very much like the ending themes, of the first season, they're good. They have a lot of the same thematic notes. As Lovers is more soulful jazz, whereas our Miracle, which is entitled Bokura no Kisuke, has more of a folk feel to it. Kind of like the first two, where the first one had a folk feel to it in season one, and then had more of a smooth jazz in the second ending. Though, here, the second ending, I don't know if I would call it smooth jazz, but it's definitely a more romantic, not quite R&B, but still romantic song, without a doubt. So in that respect, I do like the first ending better than the second ending, because again, I love that little folk style to it. But also, these endings definitely take a backseat to the intro theme that is much better. But I do enjoy all of them. All of them do their job spectacularly well. They're wonderful to listen to. And definitely add something to the series. And add uniqueness to it. As does the overall score. Again, continuing with a lot of the thematic notes that we heard in season one. But with also some different notes. Again, some different notes to denote desire. In particular, when Peroth... again, I'm going to have a problem pronouncing that name. It's P-E-O-R-T-H. Peroth. Being that she is sort of a goddess of desire, there's a lot more notes of... And you see the sort of the same thing with Hildy when she comes in. There is, it's one of the ding, the ding, 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 ding. God, crazy frog ruined me for life. I'm sorry, folks. I've been taken over by crazy frog. And oh, Lord, how do I explain this to a psychiatrist? Anyways, back on topic, and I apologize. Where was I? I was talking about desire, and again, it's one of the different notes story-wise. It's one of the different notes throughout the series, because again, it's one of the big focuses that differentiates this season from the last season, is that focus on desires. So you do have, that is one of the differences, one of the new nuances that are thrown into it, it's thrown into both new scores and old scores as well. Those notes of desire, they're very subtle, but there if you listen. It does give it a different feel throughout the series. Because again, even though this is the second season of a series, there's a lot to where this feels like a completely unique series, and then there are things that, you know, connect it to the first season that make it feel like as well. You know, those Celtic themes are one of the things, you know, Celtic slash Scottish themes, that's because I want to make sure I want to keep the Scottish in there, are one of those things that, again, connects it to the first season, but then those new nuances give it that different feel that help it stand out on its own as well. So overall, I thought the music was just really wonderful, and I really enjoyed it. Let's move on to animation, and again, it's pretty much the same overall art style. Really, the big difference here is, again, just a bit more crisper, more cleaner, and a bit more brighter. Again, working on it, you know, as they continue to the season, the first season, they just got better and better at it. And now, of course, they've had that entire season. And mind you, they did the season and then stopped to do the second season, which would come out a year later. So that they had time, like, okay, this is where we made mistakes, this is where we can clean up, this is where we can better and be crisper and everything. So they definitely saw the little, maybe, mistakes that they made, which is not many, but, it was definitely cleaner, crisper, had a brighter look to it. I mean, brighter in a well, we'll get to that in a second. Brighter more earthy tone type of feel, as we'll get to in a second. Because, again, the color scheme, going with those desires, the goddesses themselves, one thing I like about their color scheme, and this continues throughout the entire series, if you actually focus on it, they're more earthy tone. All of them are earthy tone. I mean, you see Belle Dandy, she has sort of, because, again, as I said, she was more connected to Earth. Again, with Earth being hell, Scud being heaven, and she being the middle, being basically Mother Earth for that matter. But they were always these bright earthy tones. But everybody now that they're all on Earth and they're sort of this family, and this is sort of their home, they're, you know, like, Urd's purple is a bit more earthy in feel when you look at it. Scud has gone from white and blue, white and red, to gone to white and a light blue. She's innocent, but it's gone from being innocent to being pure, which is a much more if it sounds strange, you know, innocent is more heavenly, pure is more earthy. And I'm talking about the feel of a color. You know, an innocent color is more heavenly as opposed to a pure color, which is a bit more earthy in its feel. With the sky blue marks and everything that are part of her skirt and everything. So definitely that's very interesting to look at. And then you have that to contrast it to the new characters that are brought in, like Hildy, to where, again, she's just straight up darkness, and it's just a dark, not even earthy part, it's a dark purple, it's a black purple. that's a near, if there was a glow light, I'd see stains. Oh, yes, I made that joke, and I immediately feel horrible for making it. Anyway. but no, it's definitely a blackish purple, more darker purple, as to Paratho, again, even though she's a brown, it's a very bright, sensual brown in feel. Though it really connects, again, with her character. And by the way, speaking of that, let's go over some of the two big new character designs we see in this. And we have some minor characters appear like in one episode, like the ninjas and characters like that, which are just little fun designs here and there. But the two big new additions, character design-wise, because all the character designs are pretty much the same, just some slight color, for the most part, same clothing, maybe a little different, but very similar clothing, like Urd has a little bit different clothing, but it's the same, and it shows off all her assets that, you know, it did in the first season. But like I said, the purple is more of an let's put it this way, in the first season, she had a royal purple. this is more of an earthy purple that she has in this season. If that helps differentiate. But so, with the new characters, like I said, brighter, or in the case of the Hildy, who's evil, darker colors. So, again, really doesn't need to focus on those character designs, because, again, they're pretty much the same. There are some differences here and there that really give it a distinct feel for the second season. As for these new character designs, we'll start off with Paroth, since she's the first one that shows up. And like I said, she has that bright, sensual brown color to her color scheme that works. Again, she's basically Aphrodite's. She is Earth in a way, too. And it's a great contrast between her and Beldandy color scheme-wise. And sort of the stories they're telling here. Because again, you have this... They're both these guys that give the wish, but technically they give two different types of wishes. Beldandy is the wish of, you know, the wants, the sort of, you know, I would love for a guy that's like you to be with me. The want is different from desires. Or a better way to put it is a wish is different from desires. They're two different lanes of field. To put in a way. So again, representing that desire is that sensual brown, and of course, the very seductive, sensual outfit that she has on. The black with the brown works wonderfully with that sort of, again, because it's the sensual brown. I don't know how any way to entitle that color of the brown other than the sensual brown. So I think her character design works very well with the short hair and everything. Just works very well. And she provides a great contrast to Beldandy as this, for a minor part, potential love interest for Kenshi, or for Keiichi. And again, helping them to understand, you know, their desire to want to be with each other. Which was the main focus of her character and her main goal through her chapter progression. And then, of course, Hildy, again, you know, you have the note, the white hair, dark skin, again, being the mother of Erd. She's the, you know, the demon king at the moment. Erd is mother, Beldandy and Scud's stepmother, if you say. And again, the color scheme, very, like, Erd, very sensual outfit. Showing the similarities between mother and daughter while there being enough differences. And again, I talked about the sort of very black purple color scheme. Very dark purple. That works very well for her. Again, overall, I love the color scheme. I love the white hair and just, again, making it more, giving the hair a bit more volume, even though it's in a ponytail, sort of to showcase that, you know, the notion of, I don't want to call it age, but I thought that was a unique way to show her that, okay, she's Erd's mother, because, you know, Erd has full hair as well, but it's just long hair, and not tied up in anything, it seems very youthful, whereas the ponytail sort of denotes age in a way, in this case, and gives her the older feel, like she's the older and could be Erd's mother. It's a very subtle thing that they did with that, but it's so genius, and I love it. I think we can just swipe action and background and special effects all under. They're all good. It's all pretty much the same. There's not really any different. Okay, and they do some unique things. The BMX track, for one, was a very unique location and background. They did wonderfully. The special effects are cleaner and crisper, as is the action animation. All of it is done extremely well. Not really much to compare, contrast, or say is any different, other than, for the most part, it's cleaner, it's crisper, and they just add, and the new locations they do are just look great, you know. Whether it be the Christmas mall scene, the BMX track, towards the end when they go back in time and they go to Casey's village, that was extremely done location. And again, that particular ending scene when they're looking over the forest and over the lake, that was really well done. I love it. The art there is beautiful. So, not much to say about it. More of the same. Just a bit more cleaner and crisper. So, with that, I think it's time to go on a break. So that you can get some snacks. But more importantly, so that I can play some promos for some friends of mine who I hope you check out. They do a lot of great stuff. So I'm going to play those promos, and when we come back, we're going to get into acting and the story. So I'll be right back, folks.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Superman.
Captain Marvel.
Batman.
It is 1985.
Robin of Earth 2.
Sergeant Rock.
The Legion of Superheroes.
This is the most eagerly awaited comic book event in 50 years.
Tommy Tomorrow.
Jonah Hex.
Commandy.
It will one day be called the greatest comic book event of all time.
Swamp Thing.
Wonder Woman.
The New Teen Titans.
The Haunted Tank.
Infinity Incorporated.
Worlds will live.
Green Arrow.
Worlds will die.
Supergirl.
The Flash.
And that is only the beginning.
The Justice League of America.
The All-Star Squadron.
The Huntress.
Ariana.
The Metal Man.
Firestorm. The Nuclear Man.
The Outsiders.
Green Lantern.
The Blue Beetle.
The Crime Syndicate.
Warlord.
The Guardians of the Universe.
Tales of the Justice Society of America proudly presents...
And many, many more.
Crisis on Infinite Earths. The DC Universe will never be the same.
Coming January only at twotruefreaks.com.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied. For I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
Greetings, podcast listener. Do you like...
Gotcha, Mom!
Or maybe...
Dragon Flame!
How about...
Tatsuo!
Or...
In the year 1999, an abandoned alien battle fortress crash-landed on the planet Earth. Our most brilliant scientists and engineers spent the next 10 years reconstructing the damaged ship and studying its highly advanced space technology called Robotech.
Do you remember...
Our Star Blazers!
Or this...
The year is after Colony 195. As the world constantly changes in the chaotic era, there are two mobile suits that could turn humans into the ultimate weapon. The Wing Zero and the Epion.
Or maybe even this.
After the desire for blood rules all, the only hope left is the one they call D.
Or this.
Gene, grappler ship's dead ahead!
It wouldn't be fun otherwise! Let's do it!
Or...
If Cardis is allowed to be reborn, she'll destroy Marmo as well as Lodos!
Or have you seen the latest episode of...
And just like that, everything changed. At that terrible moment, in our hearts, we knew... Home was a pen. Humanity, cattle.
If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out Anime Freaks, hosted by Dr. Bill Robinson and me, Gene Hendricks. Anime Freaks is a monthly podcast covering all things anime. It is available at twotruefreaks.com and on iTunes under Two True Freaks Presents Anime Freaks.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air. Eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
And welcome back. And of course, let's get right back into it with acting, which means it's time to go over our cast list. And since we do have some new actresses added in for this season, I thought it'd be appropriate to go over the cast list again. So, you have Drew Aaron as Keiichi Murasato, Eileen Stevens as Bell Dandy, Vibe Jones as Erd, Anissa Moratti as Skurd, Juliet Cesario as Piarth, Alyssa Broski as Marla. Mary Elizabeth McGivens as Hildy. If that name sounds familiar, it's the major from Ghost in the Shell. Emily Blah as Megumi Morisato. Mark Thompson as Torichi Tamiya. Scotty Ray as Hizumon Otaki. And Zoe Martin as Sora Hagisawa. So overall, I thought the cast did an absolutely fantastic job to this. Keiichi, again, is done extremely well. Drew Aaron. This is what happens when I get... When I'm trying to multitask, this is what happens. I thought Drew Aaron did a great job as Keiichi again. He was really spot on first season. Continued to be spot on second season. Really did a good job of like portraying a character that was trying to deal with the difference between his wish and his desires, in particular in the middle of the season. And again, portraying that part of Kiichi that's both frustrating and yet special about him, which is, his character is very wishy-washy, but it's why he's wishy-washy, because he's a very deep and caring person. A lot of people always call this a trope, and yes, it's been used a lot of time, but when done right, it's a very caring story element, because it is an important idea. He's not making a choice because he can't make a choice. He's afraid to make a choice because he really does care about people, and he doesn't want to make a choice that's going to upset people. And personally, that's the thing I can connect to. So, and he portrays those emotions very well for Kiichi. So I thought Drew Aaron did a great job. Eileen Stevens, again, just knocking it out of the park as Belle Dandy. Just a lovely voice. And again, that motherly aspect that really carries throughout the series. That always seems calm and everything. And yet, the fact that she's given a lot more sort of deeper stuff to worry about, and the fact that Belle Dandy worries a lot about, you know, what her relationship with Kiichi is going to be. You know, it's not just Kiichi's desires that are being brought up, it's Belle Dandy's desire. Because it's Belle Dandy, it's not just that Kiichi desires to be with Belle Dandy, it's also the fact that Belle Dandy desires to be with Kiichi. And so there's a lot of deeper emotions that are in play here that are put into the storyline that she's allowed to express, and she expresses them very well. The same can be said for Vibe Jones and Anisha Murati as Erd and Skurd. Without Skurd, she's... I know I'm getting that name wrong. I apologize. I want to say Skud, but I know that's wrong. But, I mean, mind you, you'd think after hearing over 50 episodes of this, well, or more technical, like over 30 episodes of this character's name, I'd know it by now. She did a great job. Again, both these actresses, their characters were given much more, because they've been taking, well, they still provide comedy relief. Their characters are given much more deeper storylines. Skurd with the, you know, the whole trying to find her own angel, and sort of having her own romantic playmate to be with, and, you know, Erd as well with the different little storylines that really dive into her life, including the final one where she's against her mother and dealing with her mother. So they're given much more deeper storylines, and it allows them to really stretch their acting chops, and they do that extremely well. Juliet Cesario does a wonderful job. Just has a great sensual voice. It's I think perfect for Peroth, and does the role extremely well. And then of course the rest of the supporting protagonist cast does a great job. You know, some of them were given some great sort of character moments that the actors pull off extremely well. In particular, Scotty Ray, because, and by the way, this is part of the reason I was multitasking, is given actually an episode where it's really focused on him and this relationship with this girl he likes, and they're just overlooking and trying to help him, his character, Taki. So again, that's done extremely well. So he's even given some more acting chops, and they all do that extremely well. As for the villains, Alyssa Boski, again, does a very good job as Marla, and does it again, pretty much the same character. There's one episode where she's allowed to really express her acting chops a little bit wider, which still, for the most part, comic relief as a very comic villain, but again, does that very well. Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, because there's no given in there, there's Glenn. Excuse me. And we're keeping with the Scottish theme in the Celtic. No, I'm just joking. She did a very good job as Hildy. That very sort of stewed, but you could feel that she was very powerful underneath. And again, that came from Mary Elizabeth's voice. she has a very unique voice, and it was a very good choice in voice actor of making her Hildy, because again, it gave that power underneath her voice, that gave that character that feel of power underneath her very subdued and laid back attitude. And made you believe that, yeah, she's a threat. Because she's not really doing anything throughout the series. The whole thing is just very laid back and taking roundabout ways. She's not quite, Joker-like. Joker-like in the sense that she lets other people do the dirty work. Which she does. I mean, as far as acting like, she is far from the Joker. Like, I'll have Batman wrapped right around me. Finger. I have no idea where I was going with that joke. I just wanted to talk about the Joker. So, overall, I thought the acting was very well done. With that, let's get into the story itself. Once again, this entire season, for that matter, stands out like the last season, and for matter, this entire anime, all on its own, stands out as a great basic example of what a harem series is supposed to be. Because once, whereas I think I brought it up that last season about the wish and about the want to be with somebody, this season was definitely desire. Again, connecting that with more earthy tones in the color scheme and everything, done extremely well. But that focus on the desire. It's not just that he wants to be with Belle Dandy, he desires it. So does Belle Dandy. And of course, that leads to other discussions, which are much more deeper. The one thing about the season that is vastly different from the first season is that this touches on some much more deeper desires than what were talked about in the first season. In the first season, they were much more basis desires. You're very beautiful, and only a great guy would have a girl like you. I would love to have a goddess like you, would be forever, because you make me happy. And those very base desires, very much puppy dog love in its own way. But now they've spent so much time with each other, the relationship is progressing. It's the natural progression of that relationship and the deeper desires that come with a growing relationship. Topics of sex. Keiichi's not just, he's desiring her in multiple ways, one of them being sexual. But he doesn't want to bring that up because, again, she's a goddess. And he doesn't want to be looked at as crass. And he's desiring her. And I thought, by the way, that whole storyline, I thought, is handled extremely well. And that's that is such a hard storyline to do. In particular, one where he's afraid of his desires. In particular, in society, Japan is a society that often teaches not to be afraid of your desires. And that is one of the lessons here as well. At the same point in time, here it showcases, look, I just want to make her happy. I don't want to scare her. But at the same point in time, when I'm having boobs shoved in my face, I get desire. And so I think they handle that extremely well. And I think part of it is they also showcase Belle Dandy having desire. Through her getting jealous. And again, that question that a goddess has to deal with, I'm a goddess, but I'm having these human emotions. And having to deal with those emotions. But again, going back to I've kind of segued into the second point with the love evolving theme. But to go back to this, the first point I want to get to, which is the harem series being a basic form again, because this is all focusing around Keiichi and Belle Dandy, and they are the main love couple here. They really don't. They hint at some things between him and Erd. But again, they also give Erd some other love interest as well. They gave her like a younger one at the end of the first season, and that extra episode, and then they gave her another one, another god, a god, should I say, that used her. And you really don't know what her feelings towards him are, mind you, but still, in the season. And then they even get scared someone as well. So it's, while they have feelings for him, it's again this deeper, you know, they care about him because they care for Belle Dandy, and, you know, they see him as Belle Dandy's. And, you know, that's the thing about a harem series. Again, a harem series isn't just about a guy having multiple girls fall in love with him. Mind you, it's about a guy. At its basis, a harem series is about a character being surrounded by multiple love interests. But whether those so-called love interests are attracted to him and he's attracted to them is beyond it. So, yes, the thing is, Skirt could be a love interest, but she's never played as a love interest. In fact, her love interest is Belle Dandy. In a certain way, you can look at this as a reverse. You know, it's Belle Dandy who's the main protagonist who has really the harem, because, you know, she has the guy that she has made a wish to, and then she has her older sister that meddles in her affairs, and then the little sister that meddles in her affairs, and then, of course, she'll later get, in this season, gets Peroth who meddles in her affairs. Because there is quite an amount of focus on Belle Dandy and her feelings and her desire, which does make this season very unique as opposed to last season. It's for this reason that, again, a harem series isn't always about a guy having multiple love interests. Sometimes it's about a guy having one love interest, and then others that could possibly form into love interests, but don't, around him. We'll cover another series that is very much like this. I don't want to say very much like this, but has sort of the same similar feel to it in February, which is going to be a very romantic month, by the way. So that's why I feel that as a harem series, it's very basic. It's a great example of the basic idea of what a harem series is. You know, and as I've sort of already talked about, the overall love evolving and them dealing with desires, it deepens the plot a bit. And it's the main theme of the season. And I think that main theme is done extremely well. Again, mostly because they just don't deal into Keiichi's desires. They delve into Belle Dandy's desires. They delve into Erd's desires and Scud's desires and Peroth's desires. Really, a big theme of this season is desire. And really, the sort of the moral that's being passed here is, you know, your desires, you have to reach out, whether it be a wish or a desire for that matter, you have to reach out and grab them. You can't just be all wishy-washy and let them float out there and just hope that they'll come to you. You have to grab it, whatever it is. And I thought it's done very tastefully as well. Again, there's fan service in this series, particularly when Peroth comes. But it's never overtly sexual, like you see in some series. And look, I want to make this clear. I do understand where some people come when there are things that are overtly sexual, very sexual, and there's a lot of sexual. But then again, I go by series basis. My idea is, okay, so here's the sexual comedy in this series. Does it work? If yes, it works. It's done very well. It doesn't matter if they use a lot or a little. It's about, does it work for the series they're going for and for the story they're telling, and in particular in connection with the art style. Something like High School DxD, which has a lot of fan service, it works very well to their advantage. Same thing here. Here, it's very subtle. There's not a lot of it, but there is, and it's nothing too extreme. At worst, it's like very severe cleavage shots. I don't even really know if there's a lot of panty shots, per se, in this series. I really can't recall a single panty shot in this entire series. I mean, there's your fair number of cleavage shots, in particular of Erd and some other, and Peroth and some other characters. But that's besides the point. Maybe it's just because the director is a boob man. But I digress. But again, it's not overtly sexual, and that works for the series, and it works for the themes and the ideas that they're telling. So that type of comedy is done extremely right. And the rest of the comedy is just sort of that classic misunderstanding, hit the protagonist in the head and it'll be funny type of funny. And there's a lot of great natural comedy that I think works very, very well. Lastly, I think I'll talk about pacing. Because I think one thing that makes this season, again, also very well done, is its pacing. Because again, I talk about like there's four arcs in this series. It's a 24 episode series. Not all of them are. It's not pacing in a way to where. Well, maybe there's five. Actually, technically, there's 22, and then there's two extra episodes that are put afterwards. So maybe safe to say there's 24 divided by 22, be around five arcs. The Hildy arc is a much bigger arc. I mean, there's two really big arcs in this. There is the Perroth arc, and then there's the Hildy arc. The first four or five episodes of the series, as I'm looking... Well, here's the thing. Let me go over it now. The first arc is... the first six. Then the Perroth arc is 1, 2, 3... Let me go up this again. 1, 2, 3 is four episodes. The next arc, which is a mixture about Scud and other things, 1, 2, 3... is about another four episodes. Then you have sort of the... that's right. That's the arc I was forgetting. I knew there was another arc I was forgetting. Then there's a series of 1, 2, 3, 4 arcs. About three, or I'll say three or four arcs that deal with Erd being... It's this one storyline that really melds into the next... arc, so it's really all one arc. So pretty much from episode 15 to episode 22, it's all this one big arc, because it's again them dealing with Hildy. Though there is a one episode that is a sort of a one-off episode. I think the point I'm getting at here is that I really think the pacing is done extremely well. I'm trying to... It's not, like, strictly, like, it's 4-4-4, but the stories that they are telling fit the episode number to do. So you have that first seven that are done. They, again, really set the premise of the new season as far as reconnecting you with the characters and giving you some fun stories for the character. And then they get into the first major storyline with Perroth. And then they give you about four, another four sort of, call them what you want, filler episodes that are fun stories that give more great backstory and give insight and really flesh out the characters even more. And then they get into this very long storyline dealing with Hildy in KHE and, again, Belle Dandy's desires. And all of it is extremely well paced out. I would say... this is the thing that actually makes this season better than the first season, is that I think the pacing in this season is much better than the first season. You know, when I watched the first season, there were some episodes where I'm like, well, these episodes feel kind of a little long. I think there's only one episode I felt that during this season, where there was a couple during the first season. Because pretty much these two seasons back-to-back are just almost exact copies with sort of different themes. And there's not much really differentiating them other than, again, the season has cleaner, crisper art. And again, pacing, as I'm talking about, pacing is done extremely well. So overall, you know, I'm going to give a review for the season and for the entire two seasons together. you know, again, this is a great example of what a basic for this season and for the anime, both. And, you know, it's all just a great example of basically what a harem series is supposed to be. It's fun, it's enjoyable, it's funny, it's romantic. You know, I think this is, you know what, I think this is a good starter anime. I think this is, for anybody who is ready to go beyond Dragon Ball Z and Digimon and Pokemon and all those starter animes, for anybody who, it's a great starter anime that's more deeper than your usual anime that you may be used to. If you're ready to move on into a more advanced anime, this is a great sort of segue. Not starter, segue anime would be a great example, or a better term, I should say, to use here. Because it is. It's a great segue anime for those who want to segue from the starter animes, your Dragon Ball Zs, your One Pieces, your Shonen Jump anime, your Pokemon, your Digimon, and all that, and want to start diving into, shall we say, different anime and dive into the much more of the, you know, deeper pool of what anime has to offer. And this provides a great example of what the harem series is supposed to be, as I said before. So overall, I give the season a 4.5 out of 5, and I give the overall series a 4.5 out of 5. It's just a very solid, very good, very enjoyable, very fun series. It doesn't do anything too fancy. There's nothing here. You know, here's the thing. There's nothing that's going to absolutely blow anybody's mind. But if you can, but if you have an appreciation for the basics, the appreciation for the fundamentals, you will love this series because this is such a fundamentally sound series. And you know, it's the series itself is just a great teacher about how to do a harem. I know I keep saying this, but there's a reason I keep saying it. Among other things. So, 4.5 for the season, 4.5 for the two seasons combined of Ah, My Goddess. I cannot suggest this anime enough. I do highly suggest everybody watch it. You can watch it right now on Hulu. You can watch both the Media Blaster first season and the Funimation second season. Both have English dubs. I highly suggest watching it. So, that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Remember, if you have any comments of any kind, there are several ways to contact the show. One, you can contact us through our email at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact the show by looking us up on our Stitcher account, which I know I need to get on that, and I will. But you can find that at www.stitcher.com and search for the Absolution Network. You can also find us on Facebook and leave us a comment there by going to facebook.com and search and like the Absolution Network. Like us, leave us a comment. And of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, while you're at it, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes everything right here on the Absolution Network, the Otaku Momentum, the anime podcast show with Relic, Shindecker Curl and his anime, wrestling, and video fighting video game videos. Of course, John Rums and his Toku videos, including Toku Apocalypse. Can't wait for the next episode. And then, of course, all my other stuff that, of course, includes CMG's Wrestling Reviews, Tom's Top 10, and, of course, the Intergalactic Graphic Review Podcast. And, of course, make sure you check out all the other sites that I'm a part of that I provide content for that are part of 132 Productions. That, of course, includes Comic Book Crazy podcasting site with Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and the Spectacular Web Podcast, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, my Tokyo SOS 8 Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And make sure, if you're on any of these sites, check out the sidebar of the site where you can find our friends. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, along with our good friend from Christ, along with From Crisis to Crisis, mind you, that he does with his good friend. And, of course, anybody on the website, Jeffrey Taylor, Spidey Dude and the Clone Saga Chronicles, Steven Schenker and the Critical Hit Podcast, and, of course, Scott Gunner and the 22 Freaks Podcasting Network. So, that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, I'm going to do a review of a show that I've been basically wanting to do for 6 months. Or almost that. I was going to do it, since it was September, so October, November, December. Actually, let's call it 4 months. I wanted to do this in September. It was supposed to be episode 101. Never happened. But we're here now. So, ladies and gentlemen, finally, next week, we will review Ruby. So until next time, my Tsunami Generation.
Find cover. It's gonna get too dangerous.
Stay gold.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.